listening to the best of the Browns.
Ball game over! Browns win! Browns win!
A weekly mix of 92.3 The Fan's best NFL talk to get you ready for game day.
We talked about Paul DePodesta and him getting potentially phased out of this organization. Maybe that is the move that the Browns end up making here at the end of the season to sort of signal we've made change and we're doing some things differently. Sitting here today, I don't know for, I can't say for certain that Andrew Berry and Kevin Stefanski are not safe, but I also can't tell you that they're both totally safe. If one has to stay and one has to go, who do you trust more to sort of be part of the solution rather than the problem for this organization moving forward?
Listen, I'm going to be honest. I haven't figured it out. It's like going through the stages of grief. I flip-flop every single day. One day I'm mad at Stefanski. It's like a kid going through a divorce from his parents. It's my mom. One day it's my dad. And one day I don't like neither one of them. It's difficult because, and let me explain why. When you look at what the Cleveland Browns have done from a drafting standpoint, they have not done a good enough job at the marquee positions to find young talent and develop that talent. Now, you look at positions like we've been trying to find a defensive end opposite of Myles Garrett for how long? Can't do it. We've been trying.
Well, they finally did it with Za'Darius Smith the last couple of years as a free agent. It seems like they're basically in like a rent a pass rusher program. Every offseason they just go get a guy and hope that it works.
We can go back to Emmanuel Ogba. We can go back to Olivier Vernon. You can go back to Jadeveon Clowney.
Yep.
It's the same move. These are just jag older guys. You haven't found no young dude that is like, okay, that's a guy. Also, you still haven't identified a quarterback. You don't have one of those. So if you look at the marquee positions, you take a look at corner, quarterback, left tackle, defensive end, receiver. They go get veteran receivers or trade for receivers. They have not developed one of them. And that's a problem. You look at Denzel Ward. Hey, look, I like Denzel Ward. He's a concussion away from not playing, I guess. But they didn't draft him. That was Dorsey.
Yeah.
You got Martin Emerson in the first round. That was a swing and a miss.
Can we say that for sure, though?
Greg Newsome?
Greg Newsome is, I think, a good player, but I don't know that he's a first round. Like, they used a first round pick on him. I don't know if he's a first round talent.
I feel Greg Newsome. Here's how I know.
I'll say this on Martin Emerson real quick because he has one good year, one bad year.
Did I say Emerson?
Yeah, you did.
No, you meant
Newsome.
I meant Newsome. Sorry.
I got you.
Go ahead. Yeah,
that makes more sense. I think Martin Emerson is going to be okay in the long run.
Martin Emerson, for where they picked him at the third round.
Yeah. He's having a down year, but I think has a chance to still be a good player.
He's to me better than Greg Newsome, which is, I guess it evens out. If you swing and miss on a first round pick, and then you get a third round pick to replace him. The Jed Wills pick was just disgusting.
That's the most egregious one for Barry, obviously.
Good gracious. It's so bad that they had to just sit him down. Like, we all seen the memes on the internet.
This is the first time he got benched. Like, legitimately, like, he was healthy and somebody else is starting over him, which tells you he's probably not. I mean, I don't think at this point there's any way he's back next year.
So you go and they say that's Andrew Berry, right? You go to Kevin Stefanski. I think Kevin Stefanski gets the benefit of the doubt from the Browns fan base because he has awards attached to his name, right? However, if you go look at what this is, if you draft a quarterback, right, are you excited about a young quarterback in Kevin Stefanski's system at this point?
If it's the right one, yeah. Because I do think Kevin Stefanski has given us proof and evidence, like proof of concept, that he can get the most out of a quarterback and that system can really thrive. Now, he's done it with sort of like these oddball players at this point, right? It's been Jacoby Brissett looked maybe the best he's looked in his career when he was filling in before Deshaun came in. Joe Flacco in the tail end of his career, but even though he's now, I guess his career is revived now. And then obviously we saw Jameis that game 2 weeks ago where he was lighting it up in his first start. So, but I'm not trying to say like he can't do it with other young quarterbacks. It just has to be the right young quarterback that can fit that system.
So here's the strikes against Kevin Stefanski. You've had the best two quarterbacks with the most talent, Deshaun Watson and Baker Mayfield, did not work under your tutelage.
Well, I think Baker worked that first year together because that was the best year of his career until last year.
Oh, okay. So here's the thing. If you see Baker Mayfield and you had an opportunity to coach him 2 years, why did you make the evaluation that he was not good enough to play?
Well, that's what's funny about that, G. Bush, is like that then goes into the conversation about who really pushed the idea of pursuing Deshaun Watson in the first place, right? Because if Kevin Stefanski wasn't necessarily the biggest advocate for it, and he was more so like, I'll just do what I'm told, and it was more ownership and Andrew Berry and maybe Paul D. Podesta urging them to go get Deshaun Watson because he thought he maybe could still make it work with Baker, then how do we know, like, how can we put that on Kevin Stefanski? Now, we do know at this point, Garrett, that it sounds like a lot of the issues with Baker Mayfield were centered around, like, maturity. Like, they didn't think he was mature enough to be, like, the leader of this team, and so that's a different conversation. 3-4 years later, he's clearly evolved as a person, and now he's doing great things again, and he seems like he's kind of mellowed out in that way.
Your record is your record.
Yeah.
And, look, if it's a fair assessment to say, if you were around Baker Mayfield and you felt he wasn't mature enough to take the team where it is, if I'm Jimmy Haslam, I say, listen, I hired you. I let you make that decision. You guys said in a year, in a year they needed to make a decision on whether a long-term answer or not. Y'all said, no, we're going to go ahead and we're going to go after Deshaun Watson, right? So they go after Deshaun Watson, right? And they still didn't get it done with Deshaun Watson. And even up to the last point, the last second, they were still saying Deshaun Watson gave them the best chance to win football games. Now, if you're on record saying that, I have a problem being like, okay, well, that's Baker, that's Deshaun Watson. Now I'm going to imagine that if you get Cam Ward, who kind of plays a little like Deshaun Watson, or Shedeur Sanders, who kind of fits a mold of a playmaker who tries to extend plays. Am I going to go out and draft those guys and put them in your system when we've seen quarterbacks who are playmakers or want to extend plays do not play well? That means you got to take those two guys off the board, and you might only be getting the third or fourth best quarterback in the draft.
Like Quinn Ewers or something like that, yeah. That is a very fair sort of debate to have, and it's why we could talk ourselves in circles about this on and on again, like who maybe is more responsible, who should be here, who shouldn't. I think sitting here today, because you cited all the draft misses, and some of this, like, I don't want to say I feel for Andrew Berry, but you can give him some grace in understanding, like, they gave him 3 first-round picks. When you're drafting in the third round and on, you're going to have a harder time hitting on guys. So his margin for error has been like razor thin, and it's been on his scouts and his department to be able to find the talent and the diamonds in the rough in that way, and they just haven't done it. I think that's been more egregious. Like with Kevin, it feels like we've seen the results at least. So yeah, like if they identify the right quarterback, I trust Kevin Stefanski more at this point than I do trust Andrew Berry. I think that's where I'm at with it. But I don't know that there's like a definite answer, and other people are going to have different dissenting opinions on it, as you and I both have kind of already talked about.
All right, so we will talk about that coming up in just a couple minutes. I did ask this question when we went to break. At the end of the season, let's just say, I don't even know if I want to put a record on it, but let's just say the course stays the same as what we saw in the first half of the season. So what do you think? 3 wins? I'll be optimistic. 3 more wins this year? Is that optimistic?
Yeah.
Okay, 3 wins get you to 5.
I mean, optimistic, you can maybe say 6.
You want to be totally optimistic? We'll go 6 and 11. That's what the end of the season says. If they go 6-11 on the year, does someone have to take the fall? And if that's the case, who's taking the fall? Is it Andrew Berry? Is it Kevin Stefanski? Is it Ken Dorsey? Is it both? Is it none? What is it? Dan, who takes the fall?
I
think it'll end up being Andrew Berry. And it's just because you can look at what has taken place with Andrew Berry and the way that these drafts have gone and go, okay, Greg Newsom's a keeper. MJ Emerson's a keeper. Grant Delpit's a keeper. Cedric Tillman looks like a keeper right now. If it keeps going the direction it's going, that guy's a keeper. After that, I mean, who else are we looking at and saying, hey, that dude's a keeper? I mean, okay, hopefully Isaiah McGuire takes off. He ends up being a keeper. But, like, boy, if you start going down the line right now and building who the keepers are that have come out of these drafts, it gets a little ugly.
I thought about
Jones is a keeper, but like now we're at seven. You've had four drafts, and we're looking at seven guys. I mean, that's a rough way to live life. And as much as you want to shake his hand and go, hey, great job on the Amari Cooper trade, at least right now, it's not a good job on the Elijah Moore trade. And you gave up more for Elijah Moore than you did to get Amari Cooper.
I just think when we look at this at the end of the day, it's really like the easiest guy to put the blame on is Ken Dorsey. I just kind of see it that way. Don't you?
Yeah. Because he's the new guy that's in here. But the problem is you've, you know, once again, when it comes to the head coach, and maybe the Browns are operating differently. You blew up special teams and brought in a new coordinator there. You blew up the defensive coordinator from the original guy who was brought in 4 years ago, got somebody else in there. You blew up the offensive coordinator and brought in somebody else for that one, and the coach gave up the play calling to said offensive coordinator. There's nothing left to blow up. There's no other lever that you could pull besides the big lever.
Paul DePodesta seems to be taking heat right now. And if you go listen to the It's Always Game Day in Cleveland podcast, Daryl Ryder puts a lot of the blame on him. At least listen to what he has to say. And
I don't
see if
know
that's,
what he does.
And that's a part of his argument.
So that puts heat on him from the fan base, but does that really put heat on him in the organization?
I got to believe he's got some input. He was the guy that wanted Kevin Stefanski the first time when they didn't hire him, right? And then they came around a year later and did hire him. I'm not ready to say goodbye to Kevin Stefanski. I know a lot of fans are. I do think there's parts, like the first drive of the second half in last week's game against San Diego reminded me of the first drive that we've seen so many times since he's taken over as head coach. Unfortunately, the ball got tipped and it ended up as an interception in the end zone. I don't know that every quarterback executes it that way. And I know that we're all sitting here saying, well, you know, Ken Dorsey was calling the plays there, so why are you giving Kevin Stefanski credit for it? Because it looked like a Stefanski first drive. It did. I can't tell the difference. The play calling doesn't seem that different to me. Does it seem that different to you? Well, again, I think Dorsey is looking at the same menu that Kevin had, and he's just saying, you know what? Not going with the chicken wings for an order of this time. I'm going with the spin dip.
We're two games in. You need more evidence before you sit back there and go, okay, this looks different. This is happening different. But through all the tape guys that you talk to, the people who really dig deep into this whole thing, they're saying it's the same offense. It's the same general concepts. It's the same general ideas. And, you know, that's the problem. I think it's Barry because you could point to it and go, look, the guys that you have brought in to supplement this roster in an inexpensive manner have not produced at a level that was needed. Take care of yourself. I mean, that's the thing that we're there. Like, okay, Denzel Ward, that was a John Dorsey pick. You re-signed him. Good job. Myles Garrett, that was a John Dorsey pick. You re-signed him. Good job. Wyatt Teller, that was a John Dorsey pick. You re-signed him. Good job. Joe Bitonio, guys might be going to the Hall of Fame. You just re-signed him. Good job. Like, Jack Conklin, that was one of his moves. Okay. He's been banged up a whole bunch. Really can't point to him and go, oh my gosh, Andrew Berry, what a horrible move. He's been hurt. That's like, man, that's just bad luck. And then the ultimate one hanging over your head. Four, who's in charge of making that move? And nobody knows because they'll all continue to say the same thing, which is that we made it together as a group.
At the end of the season, who's going to take the fall? Nobody, maybe? A couple people? You tell me. Demos is in Shaker Heights. Demos.
Hey,
what's happening, Demos?
Good, how are you, man?
Hey. So I work in the field of analytics, okay? And it's more in the business side of things, not the sports, playing side. Mm-hmm. But whoever is in charge of the analytics, and I suspect it's Di Podesta. He's been there long enough, and the point of using the analytics is using the data to help make better decisions about things, like the whole going for it on fourth down all the time, right? Mm-hmm. That's completely based in that realm.
Right.
So for this team and these players to have had this, you know, if you look at the entire Haslam era that has been guided by analytics, supposedly, it's failing. And if he's the head of it, then other NFL teams that use a, you know, maybe a different form or style of analytics, they're doing better than we are. And if that's where this is coming from, if the head, you know, if the fish rots from the head first, it might be Di Podesta. And that's what I would look at myself, because you just can't. Here's the problem with like analytics. You only have 53 players, okay? From a sample size alone, and you make big sweeping decisions about groups of players or type of player, and you put them in this bucket and you think that all these pieces together are going to work. His style isn't working. He's got to go.
Well, let me add this, because, and again, thank you for the phone call, Demos. Yeah. We love when you call. Daryl Ryder said this again yesterday on the podcast, and he put this on X the other day too, that if you want to look at Di Podesta's numbers, after the 1-31 start over his first 2 years, the team that went 13-8-1 over the next 2 years, and then they went 39-37 from 20 to 24. That also includes two playoff seasons and one playoff victory. So, I mean, you're looking at the numbers that he's given you after that 1-31 start, and is that enough? Because, you know, should you be over 500? Is that effective? Does that mean that the job has been successful? Is Di Podesta the answer?
Okay, fine. Congrats. You know, you got your pound of flesh. I don't know what Di Podesta changes by saying, okay, this guy is out, when I don't know what he does. That's the problem of Paul Di Podesta, and everybody's screaming about, oh, it's got to be Di Podesta. He's got to go. He's the one that's the problem. It's like, do you know that? Because I don't know what the hell he does. He could be in charge of football operation analytics. He could be in charge of the analytics involving concession stands. He could be in charge of the business analytics that comes from the TV
money. You know
money.
That he's,
he
could be, come on, you know he's involved
in. He could be in charge of the Haslam Sports Group analytics. You don't know. You flat out don't know. You're just pointing at something and going, him, he's the problem, because I don't know what he does. That's the problem I have with Di Podesta, going, well, that's the one that's got to be fired. Okay, good, you got a pound of flesh. Maybe that gives you the pound of flesh, but he might not have anything to do with what the Browns are doing right now, and may have more to do with what the Milwaukee Bucks are doing, or may have more to do with the Columbus Crew.
I don't know. There was talk at the Greenbrier. At the Greenbrier, Jimmy Haslam had said, and I asked Daryl this again yesterday because I wasn't in the scrum for this. He said that his contract had not yet been renewed and was not being renewed at that point. Now, I don't know where they're at this point in the game. And like I say, it's only the truth until you step in front of the microphone when you walk off the podium.
Right.
The truth can change 2 seconds later. But he is the chief strategy officer. That's what his job is. That's what he's done before.
Right. What does that even mean?
Chief strategy officer. Well, don't you think that means long-term strategic planning in all aspects of the game? I'm just saying. 216-474-0092. Let's bring in Seth DeVolve next, former Browns tight end. We will come back to the subject here, so hang tight if you're on the phone lines. Baskin and Phelps with Dan Menigan.
We will get back to some Cavs talk, probably in the 4 o'clock hour there, after Pete Futek, who's coming up at 4 o'clock. But your Cleveland Browns are 2-7. We are on the bye, and that means we heard from Andrew Berry earlier. That was yesterday. It was about a full, brisk 30-minute press conference where there was a lot of things going on there, but not a lot of them were the truth. But to talk about that, the state of the Browns, what the next 8 games represent, we welcome on. You know him usually from Tuesdays at 5:20. This week we've got him at 3 o'clock here. Albert Breer, the MMQB on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Hey, Albert, how you doing, buddy?
Hey, guys. Sorry about the delay, the mix-up, all of it this week. It's been my kid turned 10, so we took him to Arrowhead on Monday night for the game. So my travel schedule was a little weird this week, and not for work reasons. So But I'm here. I'm here and ready to roll.
No worries at all. We gotta start with how, like, was it everything he wanted it to be? Because it sounds like the coolest trip a 10-year-old could have.
Yeah, you know what? Honestly, my 10-year-old spoiled, so he's a little upset when he couldn't go right over to Mahomes and say hello. But other than that, it was great. It was great for me too, actually. You know, I probably haven't sat in the stands at an NFL game since, like, I don't know, like more than 20 years ago. So, like, from that standpoint, like, that was kind of cool. You know what I mean? Like, I put up on social media, like, I legitimately have not had a beer at an NFL game since my, like, early 20s. So, yeah, that was it was a cool experience to get to do that again just because it had been so long.
Albert, you are Mr. NFL. You're on top of everything here. We heard from Andrew Berry yesterday. Obviously, when you're 2-7, these conversations begin. Are rumors swirling around the NFL about what's going to go on in Cleveland, or there's still kind of the perception that change will be minimal?
Yeah, I don't think, I mean, at least, you know, from my standpoint and knowing what I know, you know, I have not heard Cleveland come up much as far as a team can make a change. And you're right, like, this is the time of year when you start to hear that stuff. But just asking around, and again, like, it's early. So, you know, you never know. But to this point, I have not heard anything about any change happening in Cleveland, no.
What'd you make of Andrew Berry speaking yesterday? I think a lot of people left a little disappointed that he did a lot of things that Stefanski does, a lot of non-answers, essentially. But it directly asked if the trade for Watson was a good one, and he couldn't really even answer that either. Like, should there have been more accountability there?
I mean, we always scream for it, you know what I mean? Like, and the fans always scream for it. You know, I think it's easier to answer that question if you're Andrew Berry if he's not in the building anymore. I mean, if you say, yeah, that was a horrible trade, my bad, you know what I mean? Like, you know, then, you know, A, what are you saying to other teams? Like, that at some point might want to acquire him. I know that's unlikely, but at some point might want to acquire him. And what are you saying that to Deshaun himself? You know, like, you can't really do that. So I understand, like, you know, like, the trade looks really bad. And, you know, I would think that if it doesn't get better at some point, there will be a place and a time to take accountability. I just don't know that it was in this setting, you know, like with Watson still on the roster and coming back from a torn Achilles.
Albert, what do the next 8 games represent for the Cleveland Browns?
I think part of it's like just the direction of the organization. You know, like they have a core in place and guys that are right in the prime of their careers. So, you know, like, I think it could be as heavy as the direction of the team. You know, you've invested in Myles Garrett, you've invested in Denzel Ward, you've invested in some of the guys in your offensive line, Jack Conklin, Joel Bitonio, Neil Whiteteller. You've invested in Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoa. You've got players on your roster that are in the prime of their careers where it's like, okay, like, this is our core. And you've paid them as such. So, you know, like, what does that look like going forward? You know, what does it look like going forward with your receivers, with Elijah Moore and Jerry Jeudy? And how does that color what you do at the position going forward? Jedrick Wills is your left tackle of the future. Like, there are still, I'd say, a lot of questions that need to be answered, you know? And most of it, you know, involves the direction of the core in place, the direction of the franchise. And, you know, that stuff can look a lot different in 2 months' time, you know? So, we're going to get to see it in a different context with Jameis as the quarterback and, you know, without a searing spotlight on them from a national perspective at least. And so it'll be interesting to see sort of how the next couple of months can color the future of the franchise. I don't think anybody's under the illusion that they're making the playoffs now.
Albert Breer of the MMQB on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Andrew Berry yesterday put a lot on the next 8 games. That's where his focus is. So just if we play the extremes here, what do you think the difference is for the Browns from 8-0 to maybe 0-8?
Well, I mean, the quarterback play for one. And then I think health on the offensive line would be the second piece. You know, they were able to manage it last year, but they had a unicorn offensive line coach in Bill Callahan. You know, and I think Andy Dickerson is qualified and a good offensive line coach, but like some of the stuff that Callahan did it last year was, you know, their fourth and fifth tackles is off the charts, you know. So I think, you know, better health in the offensive line, what you're seeing from the quarterback, you know, like those would be the top two things for me. You know, and then I think defensively there's still like the pieces in place for you to play at a high level. So, you know, again, health. Denzel Ward, can he stay on the field? You know, Myles Garrett, what sort of production are you getting out of him? So there's like a few different things that I think you're looking at that could be the difference between, you know, going on a run and at least making like the rest of the season a conversation point for people there versus just being DOA and playing for a draft pick.
If a lot of the core is there, what does next season look like to you? Is it more likely you draft a quarterback, or is it more likely you say, hey, Justin Fields, let's give this a go because we have a lot of the pieces in place?
Yeah, I mean, like, it could be one of two things. You know, like you could do both, like Minnesota did both. But, I think you're going to have to add, like, now Watson probably still on the roster just because of the contract. So, you know, I think what you want to do is create a competitive situation for him. And so, I think you bring in or try to bring in like an economical veteran that has upside. So, you know, because you don't need to bring in like I don't know what the positive would be in like bringing in I know he's not in the league anymore, but like a Chase Daniel type, you know, like a, mm-hmm. a Josh McCown type. So I think you either draft one high in the first round, which, you know, then you have them under cost control, or you try to find an economical option, a guy who, you know, like maybe like a Daniel Jones, you know what I mean? Like somebody who you could see has some upside and can really compete. And maybe it does better with a fresh start for himself. And like kind of maybe gives you the chance to get what like Tampa got out of Baker Mayfield last year, or what Minnesota is getting out of Sam Darnold this year. So I think it's one or the other. It's either, if it's me at least, it's either like the high-end reclamation project, the guy with talent that maybe benefits from a change of scenery, or you spend, you know, your first-round pick to go and get one.
I know that this is dramatically early, but it is mock draft season for some right now. If the Browns do go the quarterback route, in kind of what you've heard about how people feel about the 2025 NFL quarterback class, is their perception on if there is a franchise quarterback or two in this class or not?
Well, I may be mistaken, but I think mock draft season starts in Cleveland around this time, usually, right?
Historically, so, yeah.
I would say it's not seen as a very good class at all. Can that change? Yes. Can a guy get pushed up because there isn't one and somebody's going to manufacture one in their head? Yes. I would be surprised if we get to April and we're not saying that the first three quarterbacks in last year's draft would be the first three quarterbacks in this year's draft. Does that make sense the way I'm saying that? I think if you plug Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, or Drake May into this year's class, and not based on what we've seen from them, but just based on what they were last April, I think each one of them would probably be the number one overall pick in this year's draft. How do you look at Shedeur Sanders versus those guys? How do you look at Carson Beck versus those guys? Beck has not had a great year. How do you look at Jackson Dart? I think some people believe he's more of a second-round pick than a first-round pick, but that can change too. I think those are the questions we're asking. And again, like I mean, you guys know about being in a bad situation with quarterbacks. Well, you know, like one really bad one is when you overdraft one, and now you're not taking one for a few years because you're letting a kid who can't play develop, you know? So, like, that's why I think, like, to some degree, if you don't feel great about the quarterback class, you might be better off just sitting there and trying to find your version of Sam Darnold, because at the very least then, like, that guy's probably coming on a one-year deal. So it's not like you're tethering your organization to anybody going forward. You know, if it works, it works. And if it doesn't, you can walk away.
Yeah, Albert, it sounds like then, like in that instance, if it's a Sam Darnold type, and Sam Darnold's a complete outlier in this scenario, because I think the Vikings still have deep postseason aspirations, but more people than not, you would be saying, we're not going to win a Super Bowl next year. We're not going to be a competitive football team. Maybe we win 8 games. Maybe we win 9. And then you try to draft the quarterback the following year? That just seems... That seems tough for a lot of the fans, I would imagine.
It's hard, yeah, and that's the tough part is, like, you don't ever want to be drafting in the top five, right, because that means you're really bad. So, like, with the roster they have, the history they have, making the playoffs in two of the last 4 years, that's definitely, like, something you have to consider is, like, you know, we don't plan to be picking this high again. So you do have to take a really hard look at the quarterbacks, and I think that's why – like, you know, depending on where they pick, and if they wind up with a top five pick, that's why it's like going to be incumbent on Andrew Berry and his staff and Kevin Stefanski and his staff to be involved in this too. Like, you dive right in on the quarterback. So at least, like, the study of them is done before the start of free agency. So you know what, again, like a Daniel Jones or a Sam Darnold or whoever else, like, what those guys look like versus the quarterbacks who are coming out. I mean, the amazing thing about it is, guys, like, you think about this, right? So, you know, like, generally in these situations, the veteran quarterback will be less talented than the highly drafted rookie, right? Well, in Denver, you have Bo Nix, who is the 12th overall, but you have, and his backup, like the reclamation project, there's Zach Wilson, who was a second overall pick, right? Same thing in Minnesota. You have J.J. McCarthy, who was a 10th overall pick. And then the reclamation project there was Sam Darnold, who's the 3rd overall pick. So, like, you could legitimately be walking into a situation like that saying the more talented kid is the reclamation project, not the rookie, you know? So, like, that's why I think it's important. You know, I think it's going to be important for the Browns, assuming nothing else really changes, to take a really, really hard early look at the quarterbacks. And I'm sure they're getting out and seeing them now. To have an idea of, like, okay, like, if we don't go and get Sam Darnold or Daniel Jones, what are we left with in a draft? You don't want to be left with, like, oh yeah, like, we passed on them because we're, like, starting our draft work on these kids in the top five, and now we don't think any of the kids in the top five can really play.
Albert, excellent stuff as always, buddy. We appreciate you. It's great to hear from you, and that's a really cool thing you did for your 10-year-old there, buddy. Great to hear.
I'm trying not to be a complete deadbeat, so I appreciate that, guys. Thank
right,
you.
Right there with you, buddy. Thank you so much. Albert Breer, MMQB on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. The quarterback conundrum that, honestly, I just don't know how you solve. Next on 92.3 The Fan.
Well, talk about all that, and whether or not Deshaun Watson will be back next year. Mary Kay Cabot is going to join us right now on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. And we welcome her, and we thank her very much for her time here on this Thursday morning. Mary Kay, good morning to you. And first off, Deshaun Watson, he ever going to play for the Cleveland Browns again?
I think it's absolutely still up in the air, and I don't think they have an answer to that yet. I think there is a world in which Deshaun can come back. You guys know that I have written that in part because of the economic component.
Yeah, but I don't know if I want to live in that world, Mary Kay.
Well, a lot of people don't want to live in that world, but as I asked Andrew yesterday, are you going to let the fans' feelings about Deshaun Watson dictate how you make this decision or influence how you make this decision? And he said basically no. So they're going to make football decisions based on what they think gives them the best chance to win. Now, does this mean that Deshaun is ever going to play football for the Cleveland Browns again? We don't know the answer to that. I've said numerous times, it feels to me like that ship has sailed, but it hasn't really fully sailed yet because of, once again, because of the economic issues, because of the injury issues, and many other factors.
Well, is that maybe because it's up in the air because they haven't found a exit strategy together with each other to work something out? Is that why it might be up in the air?
Well, I think it's up in the air in part because they have to see how he recovers from this injury. When you recover from an Achilles like that, then that can dictate, might they be able to trade you? Might they be able to get something for you in return or have you be the backup? Or challenge for the starting job. I think they first need to see how he begins to recover from this surgery. But one thing that we do know about Deshaun Watson is that he has come back from two ACLs and one fractured shoulder already. So the chances are pretty good that he's going to heal from this Achilles.
Mary Kay Cabot joining us right now on the hotline. You have been around a lot of Andrew Berry press conferences over the years. Yesterday, just this is me talking. I heard some other people say similar things. He looked maybe not as confident as he typically is.
I noticed one little idiosyncrasy there where he was going, mm-hmm, yeah, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, like in between people's sentences. I was like, I don't think I've ever heard Andrew do that.
Yeah,
he sounded pensive.
And Mary Kay's 2-7, so I get people are probably saying, what is he supposed to sound like? Well, I do wonder, how accountable do you think he has to be in these settings? Because there is still more season left. You know, we're at the bye week right now. They're still going to play a ton of games. It does seem like they've pretty much been eliminated from the playoffs. So would you like to see more accountability? I know the fans want to see it.
Well, one thing that I would like to see in a press conference like this is he started it out by saying, basically, I don't really want to reflect and I don't really want to look forward. We just want to focus on these next 8 games. But the truth of the matter is, we don't really care too much about these next 8 games. That's not what people care about. That's not what fans care about. That's not what fans want to hear about. What they want to know is, how are you going to turn this back into a winning football team? What are you planning to put us through over the next couple of years? And how are you going to get back on the winning track? That's what people want to know from the GM in that moment. Nobody really wants to know what is going to happen in the next 8 games. I mean, it's okay to know if you're going to play some DTR. It's okay to know if maybe you want to give a receiver like Jamari Thrash a chance or something like that. But that's really not what's important right now. What's important is, what are you going to do with Deshaun Watson, and where is this football team going to be in 2 years?
Mary Kay Cabot on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Do you think we'll see DTR again?
I think so. I do think so. I think the season is going to come to a point where it will make sense to do that, or there will be an injury issue, or maybe Jameis just continues to throw interceptions. I don't really know. But I do think there is a world in which you will see DTR again, and I actually think they should take a look at Bailey Zappe, too. Why not? You have to see what you have in your quarterback room for next season. You have big decisions to make. You have things to figure out. I think by now you kind of know what Jameis is, and you don't know what the other two guys are.
We got into a bit of a debate right before you came on about Paul DePodesta. He again was asked about Paul's role, a little bit evasive. I would say that is something that fans and media, when the team does bad, we want to know more about Paul's role. We don't seem to really care when they win. But it did come up before the season when Barry and Stefanski signed their extensions. And I thought it stood out to me at the time that Jimmy Haslam said there was no extension and maybe a shifting of roles for Paul. Have you heard anything about the future of Paul within this organization?
No, I haven't, but the same thing stood out to me when he was a little bit vague about Paul's extension and role and future. So I'm guessing that perhaps maybe Paul reevaluates things year by year to see if he wants to take on a new challenge or try something different. But Andrew was very adamant about the fact that he's still highly valued and important in the organization. So I'm sure if Paul wants to stay, Paul will be here. But I'm also guessing that there will be some kinds of changes in the organization moving forward. There always are. So we'll have to see what happens after the season is over, when they sit down and decide if they're going to change anything up in the front office. But I think it's probably something to keep an eye on.
Have you ever heard the term thought partner before?
Oh, yes. They talk about that all the time.
Really?
Kevin and Andrew talk about that with each other. They talk about that with Paul. I mean, these are very highly intellectual people that you're talking about here, and they definitely consider themselves to be thought partners. I think we're thought partners with each other. Me, you, Ken, Anthony, right? We're thought partners.
I mean, I've never thought about us that way. I just thought we were three good friends. I never thought we were thought.
Well,
it's just never crossed.
Yeah.
I'm poor, simple Midwestern folk. I have no idea about these things, these terms.
Yeah, but it is interesting, Mary Kay, because, you know, as fans and media, we want accountability. But when all we ever hear is they're all on the same page, it's going to lead us to the same conclusion, which is, well, if they're not winning, all of them need to go. And I don't know if behind the scenes they're talking about thought partners when they have their individual meetings with the owners. As we know, teams and collectively those that are in power, they have things called a power struggle. You see some try to save their jobs while maybe throwing others under the bus. Do you think these guys behind the scenes are truly thought partners? Are they all truly willing to go down with the ship?
Well, I don't know if it means that if one goes, they all have to go. I don't think that's the case. I do think that they all work very well together, and there still is great alignment in the building. And one thing that stood out to me yesterday was that Andrew was very willing. He was definitive about one thing, and that was Kevin Stefanski as the future coach of the Cleveland Browns. He was vague about most things. He was absolutely definitive about that, which tells me that they believe that they are going to have the opportunity to continue to work together and see this thing through. We know they got extensions at the beginning of the season, and so that was kind of telling to me.
Well, that is a good point, Mary Kay. Go ahead.
So, Mary Kay, the next question is how they're going to pivot out of this situation. So, I've said, and I think people who follow the league as closely as you do, you certainly know, when teams are older, when they are expensive, and when they are bad, you see a total rebuild. You see tanking. You see the accumulation of draft picks. They only made the one trade, and then obviously the Amari Cooper trade a few weeks ago. So, they certainly didn't signal that they're ready to do that. What is going to be the avenue for this team, and is it a smart way to proceed?
Well, they can always acquire more draft picks when the league year opens again in March. So this is not over yet in terms of trades and different things that they're going to do. We know Andrew is very, very aggressive when it comes to acquiring talent. So they will do whatever they have to do to get back on the winning track. This is not going to be a teardown. And I use the example of a Pittsburgh. They went out and they got Russell Wilson, albeit he was cheap, but they got Russell Wilson. They acquired Justin Fields, and they marched right along, and they're at 6-2 right now. You don't have to do a total rebuild. You don't need to do that in the NFL. There are so many avenues to acquire talent. They have the resources. He did say that they can still build the team, even though they are kind of saddled with the Deshaun Watson contract. He feels confident that they can build the team the way that they need to. And again, these are smart, smart people. I'm guessing that they're going to find a way to spread out that contract for future years. I still have to look into some of the rules and parameters of how you can do that. But I'm guessing that they'll try to spread that cap charge, those cap charges out for a period of time, and that they'll find another starting quarterback because they have to do that. Even if they think Deshaun Watson is going to be healthy next year, they still have to find another starting quarterback somewhere. So they have to plan for the draft, free agency, a trade, and if you find a good quarterback, you can get back on the winning track quickly.
How much power does Kevin Stefanski have?
Well, I don't. It's hard to define power. What does power mean? I mean, Andrew holds all the cards in terms of acquiring players, and he has the final say over the roster. Kevin has influence over things, and I'm sure that he would have input and will have input in any quarterback decision that they make. He will evaluate those quarterbacks when the time comes, and he'll be part of that decision. But I don't think you can put a percentage on how much power he has in the organization.
Well, the reason I ask is because, like you mentioned, Pittsburgh. I mean, Pittsburgh wasn't coming back from 2 and whatever this is going to end up being, or maybe 3 or maybe 4, but I think that might be asking a bit. I mean, they were 10-7 last year, and we know that Mike Tomlin wields a very large amount of power with that football team. And here we are 5 years in. I didn't have to wonder about these things with Mike Tomlin 5 years in. 5 years in. Well, how much power does Kevin Stefanski have? Well, why did they have to fire offensive coordinators? Lima's hearing that he didn't want to fire his offensive coordinator. Now we're bringing in Ken Dorsey, and the offense looks like it's just an unmitigated disaster now that we brought in Ken Dorsey. And I don't even know if I can blame him. I mean, special teams has been a mess with Bubba Ventrone, a guy that everybody liked. All of a sudden, defense has not looked as good, and because defense hasn't looked as good, because there's probably been a lot more on their shoulders here, and I'm going, how on earth does he win two-time coach of the year? And people hate me saying that, but it's part of the argument. He's won two-time coach of the year. They've been to the playoffs. They went to the playoffs last year, and somehow he's losing power. So I wonder, like, what are they actually going to do? Because what you've laid out, yeah, that might be a way to bring it back, but it's like they were trying to figure out a way to keep it going from 10-7. We are 2-7 right now, and we're going to be an under 500 team probably by a lot. That tells me that the worst is yet to come. And so maybe I might not be panicking right now, Mary Kay, as we talk during a bye week. I can't tell you how I'm going to be feeling at the beginning of December.
You know, I just don't know that this is a 2-7 football team from a talent and roster standpoint. This is not a team that is devoid of talent whatsoever. When you have Myles Garrett and you have Denzel Ward and you have JOK and all the other talented players that they have on this football team, I don't think that the fix is going to be as hard as it might seem. Once again, I think you're probably going to add or need to add five or six difference makers, but you just won 11 games last year. So maybe they really weren't an 11-win football team last year, but I don't think that they're just a 3 or 4-win team this year either. Remember, they have the hardest schedule in the NFL this season, and there were a lot of other things that happened. So I think the answer is somewhere in the middle. They're probably a middle-of-the-road football team right now that needs to try to get back to an elite level.
Mary Kay Cabot on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. All right. We thank you so much for the time. I wanted to feel better, but I don't. We thank you very much, and have a wonderful bye week, Mary Kay, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Mary Kay Cabot on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline.
Jeff Phelps here. Andrew Siciliano.
Like it?
Joining us right now on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Andrew, I consider you a friend, even though we don't know each other extremely well, but I like you and I consider you a friend and an incredible thought partner. Incredible thought partner.
Oh, yeah. The incredible thought partner is just, it's the new thing. All the kids are saying it.
I mean, I caught that too.
God, I love it.
I mean, listen, it's a different way of saying he's a great guy to bounce things off of, and, you know, we work together. Thought partner is a different way to say it. But
incredible.
I get it.
Thought partner.
I translated it. I got it. You know?
Okay, we're going to have way too much fun with that.
Jeff is.
Thought partner.
I get it completely. Okay. If I'm Andrew Berry, I'm happy with the way I handled it. If I'm a media trainer for anybody who speaks in the Browns organization, I'm pleased with the way Andrew handled himself today. I thought he did a nice job. Gosh, I sure wanted to hear about things moving past this year, Andrew. We didn't hear very much, but I get
no.
it. I get it because he's in the moment still.
Yeah, and listen, this one's tough because, and I apologize, guys, for my lethargy. It's early here, but more importantly, I'm kind of under the weather and I'm just pounding headache, but thank you. No, it's okay. It's not about me.
You're better.
I'm just saying I apologize for my lack of energy right now. These press conferences are tough because for those who don't know, and I'm sure you guys have explained it to everyone, the GMs of the 32 teams generally only speak once during the regular season. And that is during the bye. For some teams, that bye is week 5, and it's 6 weeks before the trade deadline, and there really isn't a lot to talk about during the week 5 bye. For others, there is a lot to talk about, like Andrew Berry this morning. But you often don't have a lot of answers. Like, I get all the questions about Deshaun. They were very pointed, direct questions that needed to be asked, that the fans want answered. Totally get it. I don't know what answer would have been satisfactory. Let's play a thought partner experiment, if we could, okay?
Okay,
nice,
hang on a second.
Nice.
Close my eyes. Hang on, I'm going to dim the lights in here.
I like this a lot.
Candles.
Okay. Eyes wide open, and Creed is awful. But let's say, that Andrew Berry came out right now and said, I do not see a scenario in which Deshaun Watson is back at quarterback. And again, we're playing make-believe. Then where are they organizationally?
Exactly.
Like there is no purpose served other than sending a message to the fans, and it's one that I'm sure many fans would have appreciated. There's no purpose served to that. So I know that's what some people want to hear. You're not going to hear that. So with these scenarios, I always like to step back and say, like, do you really think you're going to get answers that you want? And this goes for any GM or any coach. There's only so many things organizationally that you can say, whether it comes to leverage or game strategy or whatever, you know?
Agreed. I agree with that.
And now, I do think it's notable that at the very end, he said, you know, I can't remember who asked the question, but I think it was basically, do you see any scenario in which Deshaun is back? And he said, yes.
Yes.
Of course you have to say that as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, because if you say, no, I don't think so, as you said, Andrew, well, then where are you? What do you do? Chaos. Everybody's like, okay, well, it's he had to say that. I get it. Plus,
now, I also understand if somebody right now, you know, sitting on the 480 bridge wants to push back and say, well, if he said, like, well, it's not as if he's ruining trade leverage because there is none. I get that pushback as well. But you just really don't get many grand declarations mid-season.
Nope.
I mean, he's not going to say, guys, we're drafting a quarterback in the first round. No one's going to say that. We call it lying season, not right now. And I want to be careful. I'm not calling him a liar. I'm saying in the NFL Network newsroom for years, when every GM would have their pre-draft press conference in March, right, or early April or mid-April, right before the draft, GMs go out there attempting to deceive at that point. Like, let me throw some breadcrumbs out there to throw people off for the draft so I can get the guy that I want. You know, it's a game, people.
Are you surprised? I guess there's two questions. Are you surprised the Browns didn't make more moves yesterday? And then big picture, are you surprised there weren't more moves in the NFL? Or do we want this to be like baseball trade deadline, which it'll never be?
No, I think yes and yes. I don't need it to be baseball trade deadline. Football is a much different game. You can't just trade for somebody's left fielder with 28 home runs and drop him into the lineup the next morning and expect him to fit in seamlessly. Football is much different. We all know that. I am mildly surprised that maybe some other pieces, veteran pieces, weren't moved by the Browns. I think they could have. I think they could have justified it. But you know, you also have to get a return. If you look at the Za'Darius Smith trade, you know, I know there are people that say, well, why can't you get a compensatory pick? You weren't going to get one. He had a year left on his contract. That's not how it works. It's kind of a funny money deal, but there is a year left on that contract. And so the Browns would have had to have cut him in the offseason, which is likely, you know, obviously a team in transition perhaps, and you're not going to pay a 33-year-old defensive end $12 million, but they wouldn't have got him a compensatory pick. If you look at what they gave to the Vikings to get him last year, they basically got back the same compensation. So, I mean, they're no worse for wear in that regard. You got a five for a guy who's going to be 33 next year and wasn't going to be on your roster. It's a wash.
Right.
Za'Darius Smith played well for them, and they got back what they gave up. It's a wash. It was a win, period. There wasn't a second-round pick out there for a 33-year-old defensive end. Those don't happen. So the Amari trade, again, they got back more than they gave up for a player that's 3 years older. Actually, 4 years, 3 years older. So, you know, those trades are what they are. I think they're good value trades. Don't shoot the messenger. You could have gotten perhaps a bigger return for other pieces on your roster, but they chose to hold those pieces.
Three offensive tackles. They're healthy. That's good. And we need them all. What do you need moving forward? What do you need next year? I can't imagine a world where if DeJuan Jones plays well at left tackle, he's not the starter. And Andrew, I love that idea.
But I don't mind the idea. I don't mind the idea at all. I mean, you have to see how he does for the eight games.
Yes.
So I think that's a positive if that works. Now, the flip side of that is, well, you have a first-round pick on his fifth year who isn't playing there. Maybe you use the second half of the season to see if you could find another spot for him on this line. Maybe it's inside. Don't know. But if you go back to training camp, we're kind of in a position now where we thought we would be in June or July. And that is, guys, what if all three tackles are healthy? Because the assumption was that Jack Conklin and DeJuan Jones would be back sometime during camp, at least ready for early September, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this is where we are. It's where we thought we would be. And right now the answer is Jed is sitting and Conklin and DeJuan are playing. I think Jack Conklin's number moving forward is somewhat problematic. He was one of those guys where I would not have been surprised if somebody would have called. You know, the big offensive tackle need was filled by the Vikings with Cam Robinson last week,
mm-hmm.
who also, much like Jed Wills, is a former first-round pick, or maybe he was high second, I can't remember, but he's on a second contract. Jed's still on his first.
Let me take that back. Let's go this way. I think if there was one thing going into the season that went incredibly wrong, it was the judgment, the thought, whatever it was, that what you just said would be the case, that you would have these tackles back. And when they didn't come back healthy, you know, all three of them were coming back, that threw things in such a loop, Andrew, that I think that you're looking at it now, 2-7. Who knows what happens if two of those three guys are healthy and good to go?
Yeah, and it goes beyond that as well. Obviously, the injuries at center and the rotating door there. Sure. Now Posick is back healthy.
Then Teller gets hurt.
Wyatt Teller got hurt in September, and September, October, whenever it was. All I know is that he deserves some credit for coming back in exactly 4 weeks' time from that injury. I mean, they opened the window. He jumped through the window and was back on the field 3 days later, so good for him. But, Zach Center playing right guard. The consistency on the offensive line this past week against the Chargers was the first time since week two that they had the same lineup on the O-line in back-to-back weeks. Now, week two is different. It was DeJuan, obviously, right side, and Hudson, left side. But they had not had back-to-back consistent starting O-lines since week two. And you need that. You're not going to win without that.
I find it interesting that he had to defend Kevin Stefanski a little bit today. And the resume he put out of guys that have won two-time Coach of the Year I thought was impressive, because I don't know that we spend a lot of time thinking about that. And I also think if you're looking at Kevin Stefanski, I hope that ownership is looking at it from the big picture standpoint too, because we've had so much inconsistency at coach and quarterback here since 99. You know it. I don't have to tell you that. What did you think about his answer about, Kevin being an outstanding coach and the way fans maybe are looking at it right now, because they want to blame somebody for this 2-7, and it's really easy to blame the coach.
Yeah, no, it totally is. And I'm glad Andrew did it, and I agree with him. I'll be perfectly blunt. I mean, I said it on this show last week or 2 weeks ago. I was surprised he gave up play calling. I didn't think that was the right move for my money. I'm not questioning his decision. It certainly worked the first week. I think Jameis Winston in Kevin's offense with Kevin calling plays, that would have been my preferred choice, period. But if you looked at the first game, it really was kind of sort of Kevin's offense, right? I mean, they came out in 12 personnel, first couple of plays, ran the ball downhill, play fake, threw it to Dave. And again, I'm going back to the Baltimore game. It really was Kevin's offense. Last week, they had to get out of it because they fell behind early, had the explosives given up on defense. They had to throw the ball 45 times. So it didn't look like his offense. What is it moving forward? I don't know. Where do they find the happy medium between the two quote-unquote offenses? They'll tell you it's only one offense, it's not two, which, honestly, that is the case, but you know what I'm saying. How that looks moving forward, got no clue.
Andrew Siciliano joining us. You'll hear him after the bye week, calling the Browns game in New Orleans coming up on November 17th. Andrew, I thought it was interesting when he was asked about Dorian Thompson-Robinson, if it was important for the staff to see him the rest of the season. He said, Kevin and the staff will play who gives you the best chance to win. I know there's been a big thought. You've got to see what you have in DTR. You have to see what you have in DTR. I like the guy. I think he's interesting. Do you have to see what you have in a guy you took in the fifth round, or do you just have him here, and if you ever have to play him, you just play him?
So full disclosure, the online stream kind of fizzled out. Might have been my internet at home for about 3 minutes in the middle. So I missed that answer.
Yeah.
But I will say that I would like to see him. I've made that clear. I like him. I liked him here at UCLA. I liked him before the draft. I think he's shown some signs, particularly in the preseason, that he could play in this league. I also think that not that Andrew contradicted himself, but he did also in the presser say that there comes a point in any season, and noted Cedric Tillman, where player development certainly is a little more in focus than at other parts. And so I think you can, parse both of those thoughts and find a scenario in which DTR is on the field. Because, listen, if there's pushback from the fan base saying we haven't seen anything, I don't think he's a franchise guy, that's fine. Finding out whether or not he's a legitimate NFL reliable backup on a rookie contract is significant as well, because those are valuable pieces if that's what you have. And I think he can, at a minimum, be that guy, and I'm all for finding it out at one point.
You think you have to play him to find that out? You can't find that out in practice and such?
You cannot find that out in practice.
Okay.
To quote Allen Iverson, not a game. We're talking about practice, Philip.
Practice?
That's fabulous.
Talking about practice. All right, give me what you're looking forward to watching here now down the stretch after the break.
Eight games to go, baby.
Yeah, give me perspective.
I want to go see a win in New Orleans. Is that too much to ask for? Look, you're facing a team. Granted, they have a game this week. You're facing a team, friends, that just fired its head coach and is in turmoil. And Jameis Winston can go in there and beat them. I mean, they just traded one of their top 2-3 players, Marshawn Lattimore. They are waving a flag, at least. You know, that's a little bit much. I'm not saying them giving up, but you know what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. So I would like to go get a win. And that's what, and I've said this so many times, was so disappointing about the Chargers game, because even though I am the eternal optimist and people can call me delusional, there was a path. You beat the Chargers, you rest up during the bye. Even if you trade to Darius Smith, you're fine. I mean, you move on and you face a team next week that is in turmoil, and then you get to 4-6 and you come home and you get the Steelers on a short week where the home team always has the advantage and there's a history of beating them at home here in primetime. So they can still do all those things, except they just have one more loss in the loss column, which is not good for anybody.
Does Jameis intrigue you at all at quarterback?
Yeah. I mean, of course, we saw it work against Baltimore and it defined intrigue. Yes, he intrigued.
Intrigue, so, as in, if you started next season and he was your starter, what would you think?
Not there yet. You got the second half of the season. I think that's unfair. I mean, listen, Jameis is still a guy. And by the way, I say listen too much these days. I'm self-scouting. Jameis, a couple years ago.
I've always liked him, if you want to know the truth, Andrew.
He threw for 5,100 yards.
Exactly.
He also threw 30 picks.
Well, there's that.
there is that. And we did go all week last week cautiously saying it was fun, it was awesome, but
it was the worst pass defense
also,
in the NFL at the time.
And not only that, but they came in with multiple players, significant players, injured and inactive from the worst pass defense in the NFL.
Right.
So throw that on top. And they also dropped a couple of would-be picks, and that the Chargers weren't going to drop those would-be picks. So you can't throw them. You still threw them. So that's going to be an issue. It is a roller coaster. Sometimes it's fun. Sometimes it isn't. Sometimes you're throwing your hands up and screaming woo down the hill, and sometimes you're not.
I'll paraphrase. Yeah. I just lost it when I heard Nathan say during the game, Jameis has an uncanny ability to throw the ball and have all pro safeties not intercept
drop it.
Oh
yeah,
my
no,
goodness.
If you play it back, I laugh. I tackled.
Yes, you
as
did.
Well. It was the second straight week Nathan had gotten me. He had a Mahmoud Diabate pun the week before, where I got to dinner that night and my cousin looked at me and said, he got you pretty good there, didn't he? And, yep, he did.
Great to have you with us, buddy. Enjoy the bye week. Get healthy.
Thank you.
You got it.
Browns direction, that's the conversation. Where do you go from here in to talk about it all? Well, there's a guy who has been in these shoes before. He's been in these meetings, in these conversations, on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. His former NFL GM now, the president of football operations for Sumer Sports, Thomas Dimitrioff. Thomas, welcome to the show.
Gentlemen, thanks for having me.
Well, it's great to have you. We just had a Donnybrook. We're going to let that thing simmer here. But I'm curious, because a lot of the conversation about where the Browns go from here is about how competitive do you try and stay, knowing this Deshaun contract is coming due here pretty soon. So, like, in terms of the next, 18 months, does it maybe make more sense for the Browns to move on from some veteran contracts, get younger, even if that means taking a step back on the field?
Look, personally, I think, you guys know this. I mean, there are some very smart people in that organization. We know Andrew Berry's ability. He's a very smart guy. He's got Bob Quinn there, one of the best personnel evaluators. You got really good football talent on that team. How you utilize it moving forward is going to be very important. I hate to think about tearing it all down and trying to rebuild all the way through the draft, although I am a big believer in you build through the draft, of course. But you have so many solid people on that football team that I think you go in, obviously your number one question is, where are you going to go with the quarterback situation? We know how incredibly important that is. There is a solid draft class. We know that. You're not going to go in free agency and pick anyone up. You guys do know that, right? This needs to be a young guy coming in once again, and I know that's been a tough thing. How many quarterbacks over the years have you guys had in Cleveland? Has it been 32 over the last, I don't know how many years? It's tough, right?
I believe we're in the 40s
We just
now.
Lose count, yeah.
It's in the 40s. Well, look, I need you guys to know I was a big fan. My dad used to scout there many years ago, and I worked there. I'm always having a soft spot for this team, and I want the best for them, and I do think it's about going in there, making sure you're really dialed in. Make sure that you keep the pillar players intact. I do want to stress that. It's not easy to do that. It's not easy to get some of the players that you guys have there. Just make sure you build around that quarterback. We did it with Matt Ryan. Make sure you have the right supporting cast to bring that young quarterback along. Obviously, that's been a tough situation for you guys with Deshaun Watson.
So do you believe that, like, this next draft then, they got to find a quarterback they love? Maybe, I mean, would they wait longer than even this draft if they fell in love with a different quarterback maybe 2 years from now, someone like Arch Manning?
I'm a believer in the here and now, and I think anyone in the football world right now knows not for long is even more so these days. I would look really diligently and clearly on this year's draft to put it off a year and get a guy out there, a free agent guy, or Jameis Winston, whoever it may be, to carry him through another year. That, to me, doesn't bode well for an organization. I think you need to be thinking about putting someone in there, building now. But by the way, guys, I am a big believer. You don't just sit that guy and not play him. That's a different world, a different time. Get the right people around him. Be very creative and smart with your offensive scheme and make sure that guy grows now. Again, there are some good quarterbacks in the draft.
Thomas, I don't know if you know this, but my partner and I are subtweeting each other by asking you questions about our previous fight. So I'm going to keep that going now by saying you said some good quarterbacks in this draft. Do you see a franchise quarterback in this draft?
Oh, that's a great question. I probably haven't studied them enough to put a categorical comment that way. I do believe you can win and you can win deep with these quarterbacks. It's not as good as last year's class. I will put that in there. I do believe it's a good football quarterback class.
Did you think the Browns got enough with Za'Darius Smith in return? I mean, obviously, it's such an interesting little segment that they have to live in where they have to try to figure out what they can keep for this year, keep for next year, while also trying to stockpile as many picks as they can.
Look, I think getting the picks together is going to be important, as you guys are talking about, for the building side. You know, our own analysis here at Sumer Sports, without getting into that a whole bunch, was basically a fifth-round pick, and being able to dabble in that area is going to be smart. He's a 30-year-old-plus guy, right? Six sacks. I know going back into a situation like being in a division that he needed to be in, he's fired up about playing against Green Bay. I feel like it was a working mode for him going to Detroit. By the way, I was pretty outspoken about Detroit hopefully pulling in a guy like Max Crosby. You and I both know that was not going to happen, nor was Trey Hendrickson. I think they get a guy there that's going to be good for them. I think you guys acquire another draft pick and continue to build. I think it was a solid move.
Thomas, we were looking at the Sumer Sports Trade Explorer tool in the break there. Our producer sent a few of these over here. One, this is an awesome part of Sumer Sports, so it's great to see. Were you surprised that former Ohio State corner Marshawn Lattimore went for maybe less than I think the casual fan expected him to when he got traded to the Commanders?
I was a little bit taken aback because I think he is such a talented football player. I think he's going to go to a situation to, again, my close friend there and a guy I'm cheering for, of course, Dan Quinn, having worked with him. Dan's that kind of guy that's going to move forward and putting the right pieces there, and they needed a corner there. They're kind of middling as far as how they're doing right now in their pass defense. I think they probably might even have moved up even more for that. But a third, a fourth, I think it was a switch on a fifth and a sixth. Is that correct? I believe that was off the top of my head.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was a sound move. I think you give the thumbs up to a team like Dan Quinn and the Commanders by pulling that one off. That's smart. I am a fan. By the way, Mickey Loomis needed to do what he was doing there in New Orleans, right? They have a lot of sort of restructuring to do with that team. So I think at times when you can get win-win, and again, remember this in the NFL, win-wins are important for doing business in the future. Of course, you don't want to necessarily screw anyone, but you have to be what you have to do the deal right for your organization. You also have to be mindful of making sure that it is something that will keep open the opportunities to trade in the future between the teams. That is something that I know a lot of people don't talk about.
Thomas, you know what an important piece the play caller is to having success. You mentioned Matt Ryan. I mean, he won the league MVP. You guys went to the Super Bowl when he was the OC. Like, I mean, that was Shanahan was the OC and was just incredible. And just kind of everything took off from that point. When you look at the Browns and what they're doing between balancing out Ken Dorsey and Kevin Stefanski, Stefanski no longer calling the plays. Are they maximizing someone like Kevin Stefanski, who is considered to be a really good play caller and getting the most out of the quarterback, and going that route?
Look, I've gone back and forth on that. We were in the Super Bowl when Dan Quinn was trying to pick the defenses and call the defenses during that time. It's never easy. I think the head coach needs to be the head coach categorically. I think he needs to have the final say in certain situations. Kevin obviously is incredibly smart. And if there's something really off, I think he should have the ability to step in there on the offensive side and put the final touch on it when need be. I don't think it's as easy to do that, you know, if you're on the other side. If you're an OC by trade and you're trying to tell a defensive coordinator what to do, it's different. Kevin knows offense. He should be able to override in the tough situations.
So with that, Thomas, there's been a lot of speculation on how much power Kevin really has, whether it's on the Deshaun decision, who decided to give up play calling duties. Is that like a conversation around the NFL still? Because I know it was, I think it was like a coaching search ago or two.
So normally in a situation, even if your GM has final football say, if Andrew Berry does in fact have that, we would always give the say to the head coach on picking his staff, calling the moves on the staff. In the end, however, if it becomes contentious and there are legitimate problems, then you sit down as the general manager, of course, the head coach, as well as your owner, and you hash it out. And ultimately, when it comes to a situation when your head coach is not making the final calls on his staff or on play calling duties, that becomes a whole different thing that you're looking at, right? That becomes a lot more of potentially a contentious situation. I don't think that is the case there, but I can't answer that, of course.
Yeah, I mean, you work for a lot of really impressive owners and powerful owners, you know, Arthur Blank, Robert Kraft. You've been around some of the best. When you see Jimmy Haslam, do you feel like he does a little bit too much meddling, or does he give his guys enough, maybe, leeway to go ahead and operate?
Oh, I think he gives his guys the leeway to do what they need to do. He has hired them. He's redone contracts. He believes in his guys. That's what I do know. And you're right. I have been around two very strong men in Robert Kraft and Arthur Blank. Both of those guys had strong opinions, like I am sure, you know, Mr. Haslam does and D. Haslam does, and how they approach things. But in the end, if that owner is overriding, it always becomes more of a difficult situation. I was fortunate not to run into that. I was fortunate enough, and I believe Andrew Berry is able to look at his owner in the eye and say, Mr. Haslam, this is categorically what needs to be done, and he's allowed to do what he does.
Thomas, you know, we've obviously had a couple Donnybrooks in Cleveland over the years over different quarterbacks and the Baker Wars and then the Watson Wars and all this. And I think there are some fans looking at this of the idea of drafting a quarterback, and there's some tediousness to this. So I'm just curious, like, because you've been in those rooms and you've been part of drafting the right quarterbacks, like, what does it take to get it right? What's that process look like when it goes right internally?
Look, I was very fortunate enough to be in the room and be around Tom Brady before I even got my general manager kick at the Falcons. We go and we utilize a lot of what we've seen over our experiences, right? Having been right in the middle of it, not only with the player, but also with the coaches and interacting and finding out what was right for the players in that position and what is wrong. We know categorically, again, I'm overusing that word, but we know that it starts with not necessarily the arm strength, not necessarily the ability to pass at all levels, although that is important. It's about leadership. It's about communication. It's about making sure that you make the right decisions in how you're going to throw the ball, where you're going to throw the ball. I love in today's world, guys, you're talking about a legitimate athlete. What Dan Quinn and Adam Peters did over at Washington, to me, was vital for the success, as we know, watching it. This guy is a rare athlete there. He has the ability to throw at all levels. He's got a strong arm. He doesn't have necessarily the biggest gun in the world. He is a well-rounded quarterback. The Browns, when they are in that mode, they need to look for that well-rounded quarterback that comes to the table with everything. They can't get overly enamored with this guy's the fastest guy on the field for a quarterback, or he can do this or that really, really well, but he doesn't have these other attributes. Having the requisite traits for a quarterback is not just one or two traits. It's a wide range of traits that need to be very, very sound. By the way, guys, the biggest mistakes that are made out there in anything, you can raise any hand, any guys who have been general managers, where mistakes come, like even in business, it is all about when you are overshooting your needs. And when you do that, you make bad decisions. And we've all can raise our hand as a general manager over many years and say, my biggest mistakes came where I force-fed an organization when I needed someone. Just it takes a lot of hard work and a lot of deep diving and thoughtfulness to pick a quarterback. And we'll see how that plays out, of course.
Thomas, one interesting situation around the Browns that they're coming into is Nick Chubb's coming off a couple major, this is his second major knee surgery that he's had. He is not playing particularly well through three games, and maybe he'll get that turned around, but he's getting older by the day, but he's a fan favorite, and there's no question around that. How would you balance out a fan favorite versus the productivity, especially in a spot where the Browns are in right now?
Yeah, I think the fan favorite thing is something that we always think about. We're mindful of it with the owner and the business side, but as general managers and head coaches and the team builders, you step back and you have to think what's best going forward, and you have to be realistic about what's going on. And if there is a downgrade, if that player is in fact on the tail end of something, that's a big thing we talk about often, right? I don't know where you guys were, you know, outspoken or not about, did you do enough during the trade deadline time? I think a lot of teams don't think their teams ever do enough, a lot of fan bases. The reality is it's not that easy to do that. The reality is there are a lot of players on a team that you want to keep unless they are maybe going downhill, unless they're losing their mojo, so to speak. And then you have to bite the bullet. We made a lot of moves early on in Atlanta that weren't fan favorites, and they weren't player favorites, right? But we had to suck it up, of course, and do what was best for the team, and I think that is vital. You have to have the strength and the moxie as team builders to be able to do that and not look back.
Thomas, really great stuff, man. I know it's been a while since you've been to Barberton, Ohio, but I hope you at least got some Barberton chicken when you're here, and we appreciate you for joining our show. Really great stuff.
I appreciate it. I get back there as much as I can to see my mom, so thank you.
Great stuff. Thomas Dimitroff there on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline, the president of football operations for Sumer Sports, former NFL GM.